shall come forth from me, one who is to rule Israel. His origin from of old is from of old, from ancient days. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight. We soon will sing. Sadly and certainly, the fears of all the years are met in little Bethlehem still. You've ever been there. The season brings memories flooding back of that little town and how it is that the hopes and fears of all these years are indeed right there. Beginning in 2002, a high wall with barbed wires was built that surrounds that little town today. A wall built to meet the fears of those who live outside the wall. Those who, like us, wonder if a wall is our best defense against losing the future we fancy is ours to lose. But those living inside the wall, the fears are of a different sort. They are the fears known only to people who have no future. To get in or out of their hometown, they must pass through a security checkpoint. Now, this is a technicality for tourists. You kind of go through with no problem. But for the residents of Bethlehem and the West Bank, the wall engenders the sort of fear that fuels anger, visible anger. Once inside the little town, you can see the fury of the graffiti that covers the wall. You perhaps have seen pictures of it. You can also hear at dawn, noonday, mid-afternoon, dusk, and sometime in the summer night, the minarets calling the town's Muslim majority to prayer. Presently, most Palestinian Christians have left the little town of Bethlehem, as well as the Middle East. Only Christian pilgrims line up to descend the very narrow steps leading down to the grotto, underneath the Church of the Nativity in Major Square, where Jesus pretty probably was born. There in the dark, someone that usually begins to hum, insanely in English or German or Japanese, Silent Night, Holy Night. When I think of Bethlehem today, I think of a little town where a multitude of human fears are met on both sides of a wall. Fears that seem to have gone viral all over the world. What then of the hopes of all the years met in Bethlehem? Micah, an 8th century prophet, used to say that hope was in short supply. The Neo-Assyrian army, Syria still being in the news back then, had conquered and deported most of Israel, which was the northern kingdom. It is thought that Micah himself had been an eyewitness to the destruction of Judah and the southern kingdom in 701 BC, prompting him first to write oracles of doom. But after hearing God's judgment above the deep and dreamless sleep, Micah also heard God's promise. He wrote them out of a little town of Bethlehem, one of the smallest clans of Judah. A ruler whose origin was of old would be born of a woman. The ruler would return the exiles and feed them on the strength of the Lord like a shepherd. Under the rule of the one of peace, they would finally feel secure. Those hopes have not changed in almost 3 millennia. As it turned out, Michael was right about the fears and premature concerning the hopes of his time. That was in the 6th century BC, the 500s. Exiles heard in Micah also a word of hope spoken to them in Babylon. God's promise of a ruler hailing from the least of the clans of Judah. The exiles did return and were even permitted self-rule by the Persian emperor Cyrus. But their hopes for a shepherd who would feed them in the strength of the Lord and secure their lives in peace were dashed by the corruption of their own politicians and priests. At the time Luke reads Micah's words concerning a promised ruler who would come out of Bethlehem, hope no longer seemed plausible. After 70 AD, the land had been lost once again, the temple was in ruins, the people were scattered. Israel's shepherds, maybe politicians, were no more than hirelings, as Jesus had said. Remember that Luke is writing the beginning of his gospel after writing most of Luke and all of the book of Acts. For Luke's readers, the future is no longer a blank, waiting to be filled in by whatever promises someone may bring. It is already occupied by death. And death, according to Robert Jensen, reinterprets all promises and hopes the same way. It might have been. Literally, in the face of death, Luke begins to write a new beginning for his gospel. A beginning he can only write because he already knows the humanly inconceivable ending. An empty tomb, a risen Lord, a love that conquered death. Assuring Theophilus, his reader, that what he is about to tell him is true because it had been handed down to him by people who were eyewitnesses, Luke begins the story of a barren woman and follows with the story of a virgin, both pregnant. In other words, he begins to tell Theophilus a story about the God who alone creates the future, where there is no future. The first woman's son will be born in the hill country of Judah. The second woman's son will be born in Bethlehem. But while Luke believed the son born of Mary was the one promised 8 centuries before by the prophet Micah, yet repeat, Luke believed this not because of the birth of Mary's son. He believed this because of the death and resurrection of God's son. People would live secure under the rule of the one of peace, because the one who raised Mary's son from the dead had defeated death and all death-dealing powers. That is why the song Luke puts into Mary's mouth is a song, as we said last Sunday, set in past perfect tense. The God who raised Jesus from the dead has looked with favor on the poverty of Mary, has shown strength with his arm, has scattered the proud and the imaginations of their heart, has brought down the powerful and lifted up the lowly, has filled the hungry with good things and sent the rich empty away, has helped his servant Israel. None of these are evident if you look at the world, unless you look at the world through the eyes of faith. God has created a future where there was before no future. For the poor, the hungry, the outcast, the brokenhearted, and for all who must die. Luke is saying to people living in the aftermath of defeat in the midst forward to a future because the promise first spoken by Micah has finally been fulfilled in Mary's son, who was dead and is alive. Now in their dark streets shine an everlasting light. Love and the grave is their destination. But here it seems to me is the rub. The story heard, the song heard, on one side of the wall, that proclaims the future given to the least and the lowly, the poor and the oppressed. The song heard on the other side of the wall is a future taken away. When the Magnificat is said or sung in a congregation such as ours, in a time such as this, any who are really listening can only conclude that the lyrics are bad news before they are good news for us. But simply, Mary's hopes are precisely our fears. The God who looks with favor on her poverty is the same God whose judgment puts a reverse spin on our pride and power and possessions. The God gestating in her womb, the God who has lifted up the lonely and filled the hungry with good things, is the God who has cast down those of us who have made it, and has sent us empty away with nothing in the bank. Apparently, the hopes and fears of all those years are of zero sum. And yet, what if God's judgment against the future we are afraid to lose is as merciful towards us as God has promised to those who have no future? My guess is that some of you here know what it is to lose control of the future you thought you had secured. Your brains or your portfolio, by following the rules that worked in your favor, by marrying well and raising above average children. Mary sings more than she knows. Pride and power and possessions turn out to be the precarious prizes that have the privileged, or than the privileged having. So here is the redemptive question that Mary's song poses to our lives on the dark streets of this little town. What if the hope waiting to meet us in Bethlehem will free us from all fears save the one fear that is worthwhile, the fear of the living God coming near? What if the vulnerability our pride and power and possessions have tried to deny is the vulnerability of which we were made? The vulnerability that meets us in the manger. What if the loss and death that terrifies us most is the loss and death necessary if ever we are to be truly human? What if the God who alone creates a future where there is no future enters our emptiness in Mary's soul? Of course, on this last Sunday in Advent, we who are used to making the future happen cannot help but wonder what more we should do then. But if there is Magnificat, there is nothing for us to do. God alone is the actor now. God alone has conceived the love that will be born of a woman. Therefore, we can only wait in expectation and pray that Luke is telling us the truth, that the hopes and fears of all our years have been met to admit that I believe in the sin.